Blog Talk Radio.
Of the Pack Podcast.
Experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at ticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to Victory Sunday. It is Sunday night. It is 10 o'clock at night. And if you can't sleep, then you must be just like me, because you just watched the Green Bay Packers erase a 14-point deficit at home, score a touchdown with 11 seconds left to tie the game, and then win the game in overtime 27-24 over the Cincinnati Bengals. I am Jacob Westendorf, your host of this Victory Sunday version of Pulse of the Pack. I am in my car driving home from the game. It was a phenomenal experience today, and I will talk more about that after I introduce my co-host, who had to watch the game at his in-laws' house today, and everybody loves visiting their in-laws. Jason Perrone is with me. Jason, has your heart recovered?
Oh, yeah. It's recovered. See, I never got too high or low on this thing, because after the pick six, I felt like this is the classic letdown game of the season. The Packers aren't going to win. If you go back through my Twitter timeline, I tweeted it several times. I definitely was not shy about saying it on text. And so I didn't have the same, I guess, Dallas playoff game, Chicago late regular season type of vibe going on. But, you know, when it got down to the wire, that was crazy. There were so many things that Aaron Rodgers accomplished today and erased off of the list of things that people say that he has never done and can't do. The man is just phenomenal. And Jacob, you had not only had a chance to see that happen live and in person, but it was a hot one out there today, no?
Yeah, it was. And I was field level, so my vantage point, everything I've seen was from literally field level. Doing some work that I've been privileged with. So the first thing I can tell you about the weather is, you know, everybody kind of rolls their eyes when you hear like, oh, it's going to be hot, or oh, it's going to be cold, or, you know, whatever. This was no joke. Like, me and the guy I was working with, we're standing there drenched in sweat before the game even starts. There was no breeze. It was humid. And I don't think I'm kidding when I say it was like 100 degrees on the field as of about 1:30, so before kickoff. And obviously that got better as the game progressed, because the temperature around the stadium dropped, so the temperature on the field dropped. But, I mean, my goodness, I've never seen so much cooling gear and fans, and they're dumping. I mean, they always have a lot of water and stuff on hand, but today it was like paramount. They didn't want somebody to have a heat stroke kind of hydration stations throughout the course of the game. And to my understanding, it's the hottest game at Lambeau Field since the 60s, if not ever. So now, assuming the 49ers playoff game in 2013 is the coldest game ever at Lambeau Field, which you can argue if that's wind chill or if that's raw temperature, whatever, I have been at both the hottest and coldest game in the. That's a cool little fact And, you know, the reality is that would have been a bad memory because the last time when I went to the coldest game at Lambeau Field, the Packers season ended. They lost to Colin Kaepernick and the San Francisco 49ers, and now current Michigan head coach Jim Harbaugh was the coach there. But it wasn't a good memory. And today it looked like it was going to be sour, but it turned out not to be. And let's jump right in here because it's a short week, so we have to talk about the Bengals game and the Bears game, which is now Thursday, so it's only a few days away from where we stand right now. The game begins, the Packers win the toss, and they defer, just like they always do. And, Jason, this will be one of your favorites. The narrative, or not the narrative, the storyline was that the Bengals had not scored an offensive touchdown all season. And sure enough, on that first possession, they go right down the field, they score a touchdown, they hit A.J. Green in the back of the end zone. Jason, this is kind of your thing, talking about how, you know, the Packers are good to cure whatever ails them. You know, if a team hasn't had a rushing touchdown, they'll give them one. If a team hasn't scored a touchdown, in this case, they give them one. So just kind of give me your thoughts on what's going through your head through the first series of the game. Packers an early 7-0 hole, but it also gave the Bengals some confidence through the rest of the game.
Yeah, so I make a big deal out of that. You know, the Packers are always the first team to allow a team that hasn't done X to do it. I remember two seasons ago, you and I were at the game against the Kansas City Chiefs, and they hadn't had a wide receiver score a touchdown, and, you know, it had extended into the season prior, and, of course, they get one that week. I mean, I'm not as disappointed that it happened this week from the standpoint of that the Bengals came in with a new offensive coordinator. They changed offensive coordinators this week. So Ken Zampezi's out. Bill Lazor comes in. Bill Lazor obviously kind of knows what he's doing when it comes to offenses because Andy Dalton actually didn't look like dog poo today. So I'm going to give Lazor some credit there. And then, you know, obviously it gives the Bengals an advantage because the Packers are looking at some things that they haven't seen on film. So preparing for it is obviously kind of difficult. And, you know, the Bengals have some speed. So, you know, Joe Mixon really impressed me today. I didn't realize that he was as big as he is. I had no idea. So I think if he stays out of trouble and healthy, I think he's going to be a pretty good back from them for a while. But that was the bigger thing with Jacob was that it was the first drive. They gave up 7 points early. The Bengals get their confidence. And these AFC games always make me nervous because these teams don't know each other very well. And then it went on to just – it turned into a first half of just, you know, badness after badness after badness for the Packers. And the halftime couldn't come quick enough. So that first series, you know, I'm really big about starting on defense and getting off the field. Unfortunately, in that case, it just didn't happen.
Let's go through the injury report real quick. Mike McCarthy, as always, gave us a plethora of information. Kidding, of course. Brian Bulaga left the game with an ankle injury. That's concerning because it's probably, I don't know which ankle it was, but it was probably a re-aggravation of his previous injury. Justin McCray finished the game at right tackle. Kyle Murphy was already playing left tackle today because David Bakhtiari did not play. The Packers had this game, from an inactive list standpoint, sort of, not completely, but sort of reminded me of last year's Atlanta game where, you know, we were joking that the inactive list on that for the Packers could have been like a Pro Bowl team. You know, they had not Jordy, I'm sorry. Last year it was Clay Matthews and then Randall Cobb didn't play. I don't believe Nick Perry played in that game. Ty Montgomery didn't play in that game. There were so many guys that didn't play in that game. Today, you've got Bakhtiari out, you've got Cobb, Nick Perry, Mike Daniels, and that's really a storyline here at the beginning of the season is the Packers are, well, they've won 2 out of 3 games, and Mike Daniels, who is, in my opinion, their best defensive player, hasn't played in 2 of them, essentially. Nick Perry is having he had surgery on his finger. We'll see how long he's out for, so we'll get the pet the club, pet the cast, pet the club, whatever it is. That celebration will be back whenever Perry comes back, which I'm looking forward to, but I wish he wasn't hurt. Perry's one of their better players. David Bakhtiari and Brian Bulaga are almost essential to their offense because of the way that Aaron Rodgers plays. You know, Rodgers isn't a in-rhythm quarterback. He holds the ball a little bit, and the Packers receivers and the offense as a whole doesn't help them out a whole lot when it comes to that. But when they hold the ball, you need protection. David Bakhtiari and Brian Bulaga are a very good tackle tandem. Kyle Murphy was overmatched today by Carl Lawson. And that's a story that's starting to develop a little bit, because with Bulaga re-injuring or just injuring an ankle, I can't say for sure yet which it was, that means the Packers are probably going to have to play Thursday night against Willie Young and Pernell McPhee and Leonard Floyd without their two starting tackles again. I'm assuming that if Bulaga was hurt, he wasn't and didn't return, he's not going to be ready by Thursday. Bakhtiari remains to be seen. I guess we'll see when the injury report comes out tomorrow for their game against the Bears. But to move forward a little bit, you know, after the aforementioned Bengals score, the Packers go on the field, they get a pass interference penalty to Lance Kendricks, and then Kendricks ends up scoring a touchdown off of a play-action fake inside the Packers' red zone. So they tie it at 7, and almost nothing goes right after that. The Bengals score a touchdown to make it 14-7. Gio Bernard walks into the end zone. He was wide open out of the backfield. It was incredible to me that somebody got that open, but they did. And then after that, the Packers are driving and looking to at least make it 14-10, or maybe get a go-ahead, or a game-tying score. And instead, Aaron Rodgers throws a pick six to, forgive me, I don't know his first name, but his last name was Jackson, and I find it funny because after the game, Aaron Rodgers literally remembers everything. He says he's got to stop throwing it to guys named Jackson because his two career pick sixes have come to players with the last name Jackson, obviously the first being in Tampa, this one being at Lambeau against the Cincinnati Bengals. So it's 21-7, and it's not looking good because the Packers can't move the ball throughout much of the first half. They get booed off of their home field, and they end up, the loudest that the crowd gets is when they recover a punt that essentially was inconsequential because time had run out in the first half. So at halftime, you kind of talked about it already, but it's 21-7. How do you feel at this point about how this game is going to progress?
Well, as I said, yeah, obviously I wasn't very confident about it because the Packers now, over the last couple seasons, they've actually made a fool out of me and actually proven me wrong in more instances than they had in the several years before that. But it just seemed like the formula for this team is not to get behind and play catch-up. It's just not what they do. So it's discouraging. And then when certain things happen that haven't happened in a long time and this team faces a certain amount of adversity, I mean, they can come back and win now. I think they've proven that. You know, they got a big win today in a situation that they haven't done before with Rodgers at quarterback, which is shocking. You know, even I forgot that they were 0-7 when he's starting quarterback in overtime, and it just seems like they've had so much success as a team that statistic, that reminder was just incredible to me to think about. But the pick six, and, you know, you can just kind of tell by the look on Rodgers' face. He's frustrated. It's not looking good. But, you know, even though he was frustrated, this wasn't the same type of frustration that I saw in certain other games. Like off the top of my head, I'm thinking Denver last year or 2 years ago, you know, that was a rough game and he just didn't seem very happy and thrilled there. I mean, he was obviously very frustrated during the losing streak last season. So I look back to those types of things and I'm like, is this team going to fold or are they going to step up? Because the reality is, like I said, they have one of these games every season. So are we looking at it again? And I'm getting frustrated because I write the Periscope, Packers Periscope article at Chiefshead TV, which kind of talks about the history between the two teams. And with the Bengals, there's not a lot of history there, but they haven't beaten Cincinnati in almost 20 years. Now, when you're only playing each other every four seasons, that's not as huge of a deal as if it was the Lions. Obviously, you know, the Lions with the big losing streak in Wisconsin, you know, wasn't to that level. But it's like, you know, let's get off the schneid here. Let's beat this team. Marvin Lewis has never lost to the Packers, and here we are again. It's the Bengals kind of winning. And then I had a flashback to 2009. Now, obviously, these teams are like 180 degrees different than they were in 2009. That was Aaron Rodgers against Carson Palmer, and Chad Ochocinco was still running routes for the Bengals. So, you know, obviously very different rosters. But I'm looking back to that game, too, and I'm like, man, this is like a flashback to that game because here's Rodgers getting sacked a ton of times. There's going to be all these questions about the offensive line. And the Bengals look like they're going to steal one here, and they haven't won a game. It's just frustrating. You know, the only thing you can say that justifies it is, well, these teams aren't familiar with each other, and the Packers just came out flat. It just seemed like they came out flat. And I, at that point, I wasn't feeling good. I wasn't feeling good at all. And you know, the good news is right out of halftime, they got a big play, and that, I think, kind of jump-started them a little bit. And if it weren't for that, I don't know how the rest of this game goes, but that big pass play to Lance Kendricks, who, by the way, had a fantastic day today, that was a huge catalyst, and I think that kind of helped ease a lot of our fears, those of us that were kind of feeling down after the first half.
Yeah, if you had Lance Kendricks as the tight end to make the first big play of the season, then I guess you deserve a cookie or something like that, because it certainly was not expected. But, yes, a big play to jumpstart the Packers. They score a touchdown, Aaron Rodgers' touchdown pass to Jordy Nelson. Stop me if you've heard that one before. And I have a hunch you might hear it again here as we get through this thing. Speaking of the tight end position, I feel this is somewhat important to discuss because, I mean, Jason, we dedicated an entire show to this man at one point. Martellus Bennett is not off to a good start in Green Bay. He does do some things that don't show up on the stat sheet, obviously, but at this point, I mean, I wonder if he's credited with more drops than catches. He's just not comfortable in the offense. He's not catching the ball. He's not making plays after the catch. He's got the one big play to seal the Seattle game, which is good. And obviously, he's going to be – we'll talk more about this later, but he's going to be subject – to a microscope because, A, well, he's a Packers receiver and he's a tight end and he's outspoken. And when you're an outspoken player, people want to see results. Otherwise, they say ridiculous things like maybe you should focus on football more. Like, these guys aren't in that damn building 16 hours a day. But any concern about Martellus Bennett at this point? And I guess I could start and say I'm not concerned yet. Ultimately, I think he finds his way. And like I said, he's a fantastic player. He was everywhere else he's been. I don't see any reason why he can't be now. So do you have concerns, Jason? Are you missing Jared Cook?
Well, yeah, I kind of am. I am a little concerned because Bennett's supposed to be a steady presence. He's not given that over these last 2 weeks. Now, his official stat line is 3 catches, 12 yards, long of 6 yards. He was targeted 4 times. Now, the pass that he didn't catch, I think, was just a great play by the defensive back. The defensive back came up and knocked the ball out of his hand, and he stayed on his back, and it almost looked like, you know, man, did he just get hit in the head? Has he got a concussion now? I think he was just frustrated. You know, I mean, He seems like he's a step slow, and maybe that's just the speed of Bennett. He's just not a fast guy. You know, Jared Cook had more speed, and I think in terms of athletic ability, I think Jared Cook's got him beat. But, I mean, Martellus Bennett is your steady presence. He's a little bit bigger, and you get some blocking from him that you don't get from Cook. So from that standpoint, that's why we were excited when it was announced that Bennett was coming in and Cook was out. Now, you know, the one thing I'll say is he's been healthy and available. So I think over time, Aaron Rodgers is going to keep feeding Bennett. You know, I'm not worried about him falling out of favor with the quarterback, but I also don't want Rodgers trying to force Bennett and get him rolling at the expense of points and production on this offense. So he hasn't looked great, but he did have a couple catches today, and I still think that there's a value to him, and I know some people roll their eyes because this doesn't produce points on a scoreboard necessarily, but I think there's still a value to him on this team. I think this team has really taken to him as a member of their roster, and I'm talking about in the locker room, and I'm not talking about the stuff that he tweets about and the political and the activist type things that people want to, you know, harp on or, you know, get behind. I just think he's a 10-year veteran, and I think at this point he's going to be valuable in this offense. I think we'll start to see more of what he can offer when the weather turns is kind of what I think. When you start to slow things down and run the ball more and it's about the short passing, then then I think we're going to see what Martellus Bennett really is or is not. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. These last couple weeks have not done anything to make me feel great.
Just to speak to your locker room point here, Martellus Bennett's the one who gave the pregame speech today, whatever that's worth to you. I can't repeat anything that I heard him say because most of it had stuff that's not suitable for viewers. But that, yeah, I think he had some value to the locker room. I think you've heard that. I think you've heard, you know, Aaron Rodgers has mentioned him by name as far as players that they mentioned in the locker room and adding stuff to that. And he loosens them up a little bit, I think. How much value that has, I don't know. I guess we'll find out at the end of the season or at some point during the year. But, yeah, I mean, it's a three-game sample. If you want to go with a three-game sample, there's probably a lot of guys that aren't off to a great start. It's just Bennett's under a microscope because he's the new guy, and he's loud, and he's goofy, and he's Martell. He's the black unicorn. He's Martellus Bennett. That's, you know, that's why he's going to get a little more flack, I guess, for not doing as well to start this season. But yeah, I think you're right. You know, when you see the weather turn, you'll see where Marty B fits in here, and I think it'll be a good thing. We'll talk more about him later, I think, I'm sure. But the Packers score a touchdown. It's 21-14. And then the other thing about this game, at least as far as the offensive side of things, this is really before it turns to the defense before the offense. Ty Montgomery did not have a good day today. The Packers running game as a whole, and I'm not blaming the running backs because I've said before, I think Ty's a very good running back, and I think he's going to grow into being one of the premier backs in the league. That's how good I think he is. But at the same time, I think that there's some issues with the run-blocking unit, and I think that there's some issues with today, Ty was dancing a little too much. It wasn't patience. It was hesitation. So the other thing about it, though, is Montgomery plays almost every single snap, it feels like. And, Jason, the Packers drafted three running backs. And, I mean, obviously I know you need backups, blah, 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 but I'm starting to wonder what's the point if none of them ever see the – I mean, Jamal Williams got a couple carries today. He's gotten a couple carries in every game, and I know that some of those running backs, it's not necessarily about how many carries they get because this team doesn't run the ball a lot, but you're almost starting to wonder, like, what is the point of some of these guys on this roster? Or why did you feel the need to draft three of them? I don't really know how I'm trying to phrase this question, but how concerned are you at this point about the running game?
Well, with Ty Montgomery in the mix, I'm not worried about the running game. 17 rushes, 64 yards total today, with Aaron Rodgers getting 4 carries and 23 yards. Jamal Williams, 1 carry for 6 yards. The rest of it was Ty Montgomery. So Aaron Jones, Devontae Mays, like I said, I don't even recall if you mentioned already if either or any were active. But I think when the weather turns, is that's when the Packers kind of tend to – use the run a little bit differently, and that makes sense because it's a different type of ball game when you're playing in cold weather, especially if it's precipitating. So I'm not saying that I think that, you know, the Jones and Devontae Mays and Jamal Williams were drafted to play in the snow, but against this Cincinnati defense, and I think, you know, because it's a very active front, and it was pretty obvious that the Packers weren't going to be able to run the ball much early on. I mean, Geno Atkins had a decent day today. I mean, they just couldn't get the production going. You know, the Bengals came in allowing over 150 yards a game on the ground. So my thought was that we were going to see a heavier dose of Ty Montgomery in the run game, and it just didn't prove to be the case. You know, I don't know if the Packers' offense has become too predictable. I did say that a couple times today, and I was worried that predictability was going to be their downfall at the end of the game. You know, fortunately, they made a couple plays against a tired Bengals defense when they needed to. But, you know, I think the run game will come along, and it'll be what it needs to be. Now, so remember, you got that versatility with Montgomery. So Montgomery did have 8 catches today. I mean, he only had 15 yards, so he wasn't very productive that way. But, you know, he was targeted 12 times. So that's 24 times that the Packers tried to get the ball in Montgomery's hand today. And so while he's not a pure running back in a lot of those instances, that's how they use him. So I'm not worried necessarily about the way that they're trying to get production that way, but it would be nice for the Packers to just kind of blow somebody out and get a big lead on a team so they can get some of these young guys a couple of carries and some confidence, because at the running back position, confidence is very important. You run differently. You got your shoulders squared up. You're not afraid to hit guys, and good things happen. So it'll come along. I wasn't too worried about it. It just wasn't anywhere near the kind of output on the ground that I thought the Packers were going to get today.
No, oddly enough, I felt the same way. I thought they were going to have a big day with the ground game and with just Ty Montgomery in general, and it didn't work out. The defense in the second half was phenomenal. And, I mean, it really is a group effort. A lot of guys made a lot of contributions. First and foremost, I think that goes to Josh Jones. And I'm going to pause right there at Josh Jones, because we have a guest to break down the next Packers opponent, the Chicago Bears, from all kinds of different places, but mostly his mother's basement. And that is Will Ingles. He is here to talk Chicago Bears with us. William, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, and your lovely compliments of where I like to spend my evening hours.
Well, the other places that you like to spend your evening hours are, again, not suitable for the airwaves here. Will, I know you've been with us before, and it was mostly to talk about Martellus Bennett, but since you're here, and some people may have missed that particular show, and if you did, shame on you. Shouldn't miss any of these shows. But if you did, well, who are you? What do you do? Who are you with? All those things.
So my name is William Ingles, as Jake mentioned before. I mainly write with Windy City Sports, Bear Goggles On. I'm part of a brand new podcast that Chicago Bears related. It's the Chicago Bears 2-Minute Drill. We just went live on iTunes. It's a debate format show where it's, instead of a Stephen A. type of show where it's just, you know, a lot of talking heads yelling at each other for a while, it's more formatted debate, and there's definitely a lot of contestable things going around the Bears right now. So that's the bright new project I'm working on, and I'm excited to be here again.
Yes, welcome back, and let's start. The Bears are 1-2. They got off the schneid today with a big win over the Pittsburgh Steelers. And really, the scheduling gods, or whoever it is that does that, did them no favors. They start at home against Atlanta, the defending NFC champions. Then they got Tampa, a rising team. They come back home to play the Steelers, who's expected to be one of the best teams in football this year, and to this point had at least proven to be pretty good. And then they have a short week and have to go to Green Bay to play the Packers. That's their first four games of the season. Excuse me, while breaking in a new quarterback, which at the time that the schedule was made, they didn't know whether it was going to be Mike Glennon or someone else, because Mitch Trubisky had not been drafted just yet. And let's start there. What has been the situation with Mike Glennon? And is it possible, well, with them winning today, I suppose it's probably not, but maybe I'm wrong, is it possible that Mitchell Trubisky plays this Thursday in Green Bay?
If Mitchell Trubisky plays this Thursday in Lambeau, it's either due to injury or Mike Glennon literally loses his pulse in all football sense on the field in the first half. I think your possibilities of seeing Trubisky on Thursday might range around 5%. This is a coaching staff that has touted Mike Glennon as a starter. You know, some people say that's undeserved. I'd probably lean on that faction as well. But overall, this is a coaching staff that is very pro-Glennon, and he is going to have to do everything in his power to lose his job, or the season has to be completely lost, which four games in just isn't the case quite yet, especially coming off of a win tonight. Just your possibilities of seeing Trubisky at this point are very slim, despite what many Chicago fans would hope. But that's just the reality of the situation, where the organization wants to go and how they want Trubisky to develop.
Hey, Will, Jason, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. And ironically, we had a chance to interact a little bit earlier today on the Twitter, and one of the things we were talking about was the Chicago run game. And obviously, we know about Jordan Howard, but you know the Bears ran the ball pretty well today against a very physical Pittsburgh Steelers team. And this is now 2 weeks in a row, or actually two out of the last 3 weeks now, that the Bears have either beaten or should have beaten a team that has gone deep in the playoffs or is likely to go deep in the playoffs this season. So while maybe the prognosis might be, you know, a little different by the season's end, let's talk about the run game, because the Packers defense had some trouble today against a bigger back and Joe Mixon and Giovanni Bernard. You've got kind of a two-headed monster there in Chicago. So what are you, from the Bears' perspective, expecting in terms of production from the run game when they come into Lambeau in 4 days?
Division games are always tough to predict like this. You can be going on a certain track, and division games are just always hard to tell because you already know each other so well. It's funny you mentioned that they had a great day running today. This was their best day on the ground since 2014 against the Green Bay Packers, where they had, I want to say, 235 yards on the ground. Didn't really count for much. Yes, they lost that game. Hashtag run to win. but I just don't see this translating over as far as the Bears are concerned. It's definitely, I think, what made the difference today was that they just had the tone set again by Kyle Long coming back from injury. I think that definitely gave the Bears a mentality of keep pounding to an extent that I think personnel just didn't extend to, because the Bears got banged up even more on the offensive line today. Grissoux hurt his hand or wrist, I believe. So they were shuffling all over the place. They kept Long at right guard, which I think will be key. But I do think that the Bears might be able to find some success, but at the same time, Green Bay knows how to game plan for the Bears. And as much as we want to compliment this rushing game and the fact that the Steelers couldn't do anything to stop it, you know, just watching the game from what I could see, we don't get a chance to break down the old 22 film quite yet, but there was a lot of safeties flying down that were unblocked that just either ran to the wrong spot or just failed to make tackles. And to an extent, I think that the Packers will be able to do that a little bit better despite them having a bit of a down day this afternoon. Cohen adds a little bit more of a wrinkle to this, though. I think they might not have a problem with Howard, and if it was just Howard, it would be another story. But Cohen does make this a little bit more interesting now that you have to worry about, you know, the perimeter rushing attack as well as Cohen's threat out of the backfield. I mean, anytime this guy has the ball and 2 yards of space, he can be lethal, and the Steelers definitely saw that today.
Yeah, he's a human joystick. He's been – and that was kind of a – well, not for me, because I don't question that stuff right away, but a lot of people were kind of scratching their heads when Cohen was picked, because this was a Bears roster that had Jordan Howard and Kadeem Carey and Jeremy Langford, and they had Benny Cunningham on the roster as well. And they take Cohen anyways, and now that looks like a hell of a pick, at least early on, through three games. He's a human joystick. I think that's the best way to put it. He's all over the place, and he's fast as hell. That's really a good way to put it. We've talked about some of their weaknesses, obviously, being, you know, the quarterback position, namely. Let's talk about their strength. Their defense is actually, I thought coming into the year, the reason I thought the Bears could win anywhere from 6 to 8 games, and I ended up pegging them for 7 and 9, I didn't think Mike Glennon would be good. Let's not shortchange it here. I thought he was going to be
absolutely fair.
Not good, but I didn't think he would be a complete dumpster fire. And I thought the Bears' defense under Vic Fangio, who I've wanted to be the Packers' defensive coordinator since Moses was a young man, has a really good unit there. I mean, Akeem Hicks is a really good defensive lineman. Eddie Goldman's a really good defensive lineman. Leonard Floyd, Pernell McPhee, who's, you know, kind of bounced in and out, I guess, with injuries, but still a good player when he's healthy. And who'd I miss?
Floyd. Young.
And Leonard Floyd. Yeah, those three guys, really, they make a fearsome front seven. I know some of that has changed a little bit with the loss of both, well, of Jarrell Freeman and Nick Quaid, I can't pronounce his name.
Kwiatkowski. It's a tough
one.
Yeah,
the white guy. The white guy. The Bears front seven is really good, and the Packers offensive line is banged up. If the Bears are going to have a chance to win this game, these are the matchups they have. I mean, Leonard Floyd was awesome when he came to Lambeau Field last year. This is the matchup they really have to win if they want to have a chance, right?
And it's really funny you mentioned that. The Green Bay game was definitely Leonard Floyd's breakout game last year. He had a really quiet start to the year. Some of that was due to injury, but he started out very slow again this year. Fangio has actually dropped him a lot into coverage, which Floyd is perfectly capable of playing coverage, and he's capable of surprising some people that way. But in the same hat, Leonard Floyd's going to rush the passer. I mean, you don't go to Von Miller and say, hey, we want you to drop into coverage 20 to 25 plays. But that at this point, this is what Fangio's doing. And I think that you're absolutely right, Jake, that they need to capitalize on this matchup. They definitely need to get some pressure on Rodgers. However, it has never been a strength of the Bears since Lovie Smith's golden days in 2006 and maybe 2012 as far as a secondary that's starting to look competent again. Despite the halftime gaffe by Marcus Cooper today, he played a phenomenal game overall. He was playing some excellent speedsters and Antonio Brown against the Steelers. Kyle Fuller started to look somewhere near the first-round pick he was selected as. And then you also have Prince Amukamara, who came back today, and he's been doing well as a corner. You also have Bryce Callahan, who's done well in the slot. And if you combine this pressure along with the secondary players that have been revamped, also forgot to mention Eddie Jackson, a rookie at safety. He's been holding his ground. He hasn't made any explosive plays like people might thought he'd do early on as kind of a ball-hawking safety at Alabama. And then Quentin Dempsey got banged up today, but he's also done a decent job of at least not pulling a Chris Conte, as I'm sure Packers fans enjoy to relish in, but that they've done a lot better of not letting big plays happen. And I believe to this point the Bears have only allowed 3 drives of 50 yards or more this year. I know 2 of the Steelers scoring drives this afternoon were 16 yards and 21 yards. So it's definitely a bend and don't break defense for Vic Fangio, but it's worked so far. And I definitely agree with you at the end of the day, Jake. That pass rush was key in getting to Ben Roethlisberger. Callahan forced a strip sack, which helped the Bears at least maintain field position. I think they missed the field goal on that drive. But overall, that pass rush caused a lot of problems for Big Ben today, and I think that's going to be key for Aaron Rodgers as well. However, we've seen Aaron Rodgers is a lot more mobile, so it's definitely a dynamic matchup that we'll have to watch.
Okay, Will, so let's stick with the defensive backs because Prince Amukamara and Fuller both had 2 pass breakups today. The Bears had 7 overall, which is a pretty good day against a good quarterback in Ben Roethlisberger. So here you go. You got another top-tier QB coming, and it's a road game at Lambeau Field, which, for the defense, they're not dealing with noise like the offense is. But, it's a road environment. But Fuller is a veteran now. Prince is definitely a veteran at this point. But you're going up against these wide receivers who struggled today against a pretty fast Bengals secondary. So when you look at a shifty receiver like Jordy Nelson, who doesn't necessarily have the lightning speed anymore, but is still very savvy in this offense, and they got Lance Kendricks going, and Randall Cobb may or may not be back for this game, and we all know what Cobb has done in some of the games against the Bears in the past. You said that the secondary is starting to look competent, and I agree with you. How are you feeling about that matchup against the Packers passing game? And I know, like you said, the pass rush is going to be key, and that's going to be a huge boost to the secondary. But let's just go, in a vacuum here. Chicago's secondary against Green Bay's receivers. How are you feeling about that?
As any defensive back going against the Green Bay Packers, I have a hard time thinking you're going to sleep well the night before the game. And I think that applies again for the Bears. You mentioned 7 pass breakups. Yeah, they made some great plays today, but you have to keep in mind that the very first play of the game, Roethlisberger drops back from maybe his 25 and launches a ball to Wheaton that was bounced off his fingertips. There's definitely big plays available against this Bears defense, and if there's anyone who's exploited them for the past umpteen million years it's been Aaron Rodgers. And I think those big plays go a long way to demoralize Vic Fangio's defense because, as I mentioned earlier, it's a bend but don't break. And when you let off those 60, 70-yard plays or even, you know, 40-yarders, it's just demoralizing to that type of defense. I think Bears fans saw that against Atlanta. It didn't put the game out of reach by any means, but when you see a big play touchdown, that's a lot of ways the only – easy way to score against the Bears defense is by knocking out a big play, because there are holes for that considering that the secondary is improved but still not quite there. So in a vacuum, I would definitely give the edge to the Packers receivers. Like you said, they might not be a speedy bunch, but there's definitely windows open against the Bears.
Let's go to the other side. Speaking of defensive backs, the Packers have a young group of DBs. They're going through some growing pains. I think that's pretty fair to say at this point. Kevin King, pretty good against the Falcons, and struggled a little bit with A.J. Green today. Now, kudos to him for stepping up against A.J. Green, but, you know, he's going to struggle. The Bears receiving core, Alshon Jeffrey is gone, and I got to be honest with you, if I didn't have a program, I don't think I would know who the hell is on their roster as far as receivers go. Again, I know that Mike Glennon isn't good, but having next to nothing, who's their biggest weapon to make plays in the passing game? I mean, you read the box score today, and you see that the Bears won, and they had 101 yards passing from their starting quarterback.
Yeah, don't remind me.
Yeah, is that a product of – there's got to be some blame that goes to the wide receivers, right? I mean, who's their best receiver at this point? I know Meredith got knocked out for the season with an injury. I know Kevin White hasn't played a down hasn't played since week one because he got hurt as well. Who's their best receiver? And, I mean, is this a way that the Packers can exploit some matchups by the fact that the Bears simply just don't have anybody to throw the ball to?
Well, here's the thing. Watching a bunch of old 22 film, it's extremely frustrating to see that despite maybe not knowing any of the names on their jersey until the play-by-play tells you who they are, they're getting open. And that's the beauty of a Dow login system. I mean, when the Packers came to Soldier Field in the winter last year, you know, Matt Barkley is by no means any type of competent quarterback. I mean, he doesn't even have a job right now. But there were open windows for Bears receivers to go through. It's very much friendly to a quarterback with a quick trigger. Mike Glennon is not that quarterback. When you look at the box score today, you see that it was 101 yards, but did any of you see how many of those yards were to a wide receiver? Excluding tight ends and running backs, did any of you see how many yards went to a receiver? A whopping 9 yards. One catch to the
DeAndre
Thompson, I want to say, in the third quarter. I mean, that's abysmal. And, you know, Jake, maybe some of it goes on the receivers to an extent, but I put 90% of that on Glennon. He has a very slow trigger. He doesn't seem confident going anywhere outside the hashes. And to your point of saying that might be a matchup you want to exploit, yes seems to be a word that wraps that up pretty well. They have matchups that are getting exploited. I want to say the strip sack against Tampa Bay, there was Kendall Wright was running right down the middle of the field wide open, had about a 10-yard cushion out in front of him, but Glennon sees pressure and he absolutely panics. And that's the problem. Like I said, Dow Loggins prospers with a quick-triggered quarterback, and Glennon pumps once, pumps twice, and goes down unless he's thrown to a check down to a running back or maybe a 5-yard hitch by a tight end.
Okay, Will, so obviously we've talked about pass rush, and the Packers have not really gotten their primary pass rush going in terms of coming from their outside linebackers. We talked about Nick Perry, and, you know, I don't know what the prognosis is for how soon he'll play. It sounds like it might not be a very long-term injury, but he did have a surgery on a finger, so, or maybe it may have been a thumb. But I'm just curious, as far as the protection goes up front for the Bears, you know, you've got Josh Sitton, you've got Kyle Long, you've got you know, some guys that have been there for a while. So if you get the quarterback a little bit of extra time back there, I mean, obviously it's critical to protect the QB, but are you worried about, you know, Clay Matthews has historically had some pretty big games against the Bears. You know, he's having a rough patch, but all of a sudden, like, he breaks out against Chicago. Are you kind of guarding against, you know, this being Green Bay's maybe coming out party here in terms of their pass rush and getting a little bit extra pressure? Because obviously with a quarterback like Mike Glennon, you throw some pressure at him, you know, he's probably going to have some struggles with that. So how are you feeling in terms of the offensive line's ability to kind of let the offense get into a rhythm and do what it's going to do? We saw how critical it was for Andy Dalton, who's had his struggles throughout his career. So I'm just curious, you know, kind of how you see that side of things, and if you think that Chicago's offensive line is a huge strength in that matchup, or if there's any, you know, level of concern.
For Green Bay to exploit the issue of a pass rush, it's got to be on the outside. For the most part, the interior of their line has been rock solid. You mentioned Josh Sitton. He might not be playing on Thursday. He was out today with a rib injury. Kyle Long is still going to be banged up, but it looks like Whitehair and Grissou, despite those three, Long, Grissou, and Whitehair, will likely be rock solid. Where it comes to burning the Bears on a pass rush, it's going to always be their tackles at the time being, with Bobby Massey and Leno Jr. It's just where the Bears are weakest as far as a pass rushing aspect. They are susceptible to a speed rush specifically. I think it was Bobby Massey that gave up the fourth down pressure against Atlanta in week one that led to the end of the game. But you mentioned that the offensive line gets the Bears into a rhythm. I think that mainly has to do with the run game. Glennon's gotten more than ample time throughout the season. The problem is he doesn't feel pressure. He doesn't know how to step up into the pocket. His pocket presence as a whole is disastrous, atrocious, any type of adjective that goes along with that. It's been painful to watch. And as long as the Packers can push any type of pressure up the middle, I mean, not even getting free, just as long as they push the front of the pocket maybe a yard and a half, Glennon panics. So while it might not be a strength at this point, I would definitely say rushing the outside and getting any type of push up the middle, even if that doesn't mean getting a free runner, causes Glennon to panic, and that can only mean good things for a Packers defense. There's a reason that the Bears only attempted 22 passes today, and that's because they're terrified of letting Mike Glennon throw. They didn't attempt a single pass in overtime today, and that has a lot to do with the fact that I don't think they trust him one bit to win a game.
See, that's the part I just don't understand. Like, I know we already talked about the quarterback, but if you don't trust the guy to win the game, then why is he in the game when you have the number two overall? I don't want to talk about the quarterback anyway. That just doesn't make sense.
I was going to say, you're starting to sound like a Bear fan, Jake. You might want to watch out.
I was going to say, I can't imagine how frustrated you guys are. Like, if you don't trust somebody, then get them off the field and see if you can find somebody else to trust. But Thursday, it's a 7:30 kickoff. It's the color rush game, whatever the hell that means. Packers and Bears. The Packers won both matchups last season. The Bears' last win against Green Bay was on Thanksgiving. Brett
2015?
Favre nights. Correct. Thanksgiving 2015. I mean, it's a big game for both teams. They're on a short week. The Bears could knot up their record at 2-2 and get through this murderer's row of a schedule that way. Packers can get to 3-1 before a mini bye. Both teams obviously have a mini bye after that, but ultimately, you've given us all the matchups. You've given us what the Bears can do. At the end of the day, who wins?
I definitely got to give this one to the Packers. It's at home. It's a short week. There's nothing that tells me Glennon will be able to mystically put it together a game. I think we see a lot of the passing game that we saw this week, and I don't think we'll see the run be quite as successful. And if the Bears weren't churning out first downs, you know, by the dozen by running the ball, I think we see that defense get tired a lot quicker. And as far as the Packers offense is concerned, I'm a lot more confident in them being able to churn out, you know, a few first downs per series and tiring that defense out a little bit. That's something that the Steelers just didn't do. They would get a dumb penalty or they get sacked on one play and really set themselves behind the chain, setting up those three and outs, allowing the Bears offense to at least try to get some traction and at least getting that defense off the field for a little bit. I just don't see it working out that way for Chicago. I think the Packers take another win in Lambeau, and the Bears will drop to 1-3. We maybe hear the shouts for Trubisky getting a little bit louder, and the Packers will continue on their merry way, 3-1.
They don't call him the best basement analyst for nothing, folks. That's Will Engels of Windy City Sports and Bear Goggles On, and former pupil of myself when it came to football. I used to coach him once upon a time as well. He's got the Packers winning Thursday night and maybe getting closer to Mitchell Trubisky time in Chicago. You can follow him on Twitter. He's at Will Engels with two L's in both the first and the last name. Thank you, Will, for coming on as
and
always.
Engels,
and we'll...
Engels is I-N-G-A-L-L-S, like the author.
Oh, yeah, there you go. All right, so he spells it out for you guys. Will, thanks for coming on, as always. We'll see you. There's another one of these matchups at Soldier Field. We'll see where the team's at then. Hopefully we have Mitchell Trubisky to break down by that point. Because
and hopefully
as,
I'll be out of my mom's basement, according to you.
I will not count on it. But thanks, Will, for coming, and we'll see you in a few weeks, all right?
Thanks, Will.
Thanks, Jake. Thanks, Jason. Thank you so much. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Again, that was Will Engels of Windy City Sports breaking down the Bears and Packers matchup on Thursday night. Let's finish the Bengals breakdown before we get to the Bears. So stay with me through the choppiness of this show. But it's good content regardless. We're talking Packers football. How bad can it be? I just started talking about Josh Jones, Jason. I think when we get to the game ball segment of this show, the only reason we wouldn't pick him is just to be contrarian. This guy is a human blur on the field. He's so fast. He had two sacks, big tackles throughout the course of the game, and he really looked like he belonged on the field. He was absolutely the Packers' best player on the defensive side of the ball today, and he really only got to play because Kentrell Bryce suffered an injury last week. No offense to Kentrell Bryce, but in the I'm not going to compare Josh Jones to Brett Favre, obviously, but it's kind of interesting, I guess, that a safety might have lost his job playing against the Bengals like Don Majkowski did back in the day against the Packers. Now, Josh Jones, Brett Favre's the first ballot Hall of Famer. I'm not saying Josh Jones is going to be that, but Jason, between him and I know the numbers will say that Kevin King gave up a passer rating of about 100. He had an interception wiped out by what I thought was a bad penalty. Again, but I was across the field, so I guess I couldn't really tell. But from the naked eye, it looked like a bad penalty to me. I thought both defensive backs that are young did really well today. And, I mean, realistically, they were asking Kevin King at times to play one-on-one against A.J. Green, who, I mean, there's Julio Jones, there's Odell Beckham, there's Antonio Brown, and A.J. Green is right there in that class with those guys. He is a stud. And if he played with Aaron Rodgers, there would be so many more people that knew it and acknowledged it, but he plays with Andy Dalton. So that's, I suppose, the misfortune of being A.J. Green at this point. But, Jason, how do you feel about the young defensive backs? Josh Hawkins got some run today on the field as well. He didn't allow a completion from what I remember either. It wasn't a dominating performance in the second half, but at the end of the day, they got it done. And, you know, one of the narratives about this defense really is that they never step up when you need them the most. And the Packers did not get the ball first in overtime. The Bengals did. And, again, Josh Jones, two big plays, gets them off the field. So I say all that to say, how do you feel about the two young defensive backs, Kevin King and Josh Jones, and their performance and really their first extended action of the season?
Well, Josh Jones, I'll tell you what, he looks good in that nitro package. He looks good at linebacker. He's not a huge guy, but he missiles right into that line of scrimmage. And if he doesn't make the play, he definitely takes one of the offensive linemen out of it and frees up an opportunity for someone else to do it. I mean, Josh Jones was today what we all hoped he was going to be when he was drafted and what everybody talked about him becoming and doing and that he was going to kind of transform this defense maybe single-handedly. And if he can play like he did today, I mean, he had a heck of a game today. And if he can do that every week, then, you know, he's not just a star in the making. He could be an extremely big star in the making. So his stat line today, 12 tackles, 2 sacks, both on third down. He had another tackle for a loss. And, of course, with the 2 sacks, he got 2 hits on the quarterback. So those are just what shows up in the stat line. But he was active and all over the place. I mean, a young man who's not afraid to make plays and who needs to step up in a big game, that's, you know, as young as the Packers like to be sometimes, and they're not the youngest team in the league anymore, but as they still rely on their rookies. Josh Jones did not disappoint today. And I can tell you something right now. Kentrell Bryce can take all the time he needs to heal. There is no question. Josh Jones is now taking Kentrell Bryce's snaps until further notice. So you got that going on. King has his first start, makes his first start today, and I'm kind of watching the game back right now as we're talking, and I'm halfway through the fourth quarter, and Kevin King had that attempt to kind of stretch out and get that pick along the sideline and wasn't able to catch the football. But, you know, King didn't have an incredible stat line today. He didn't break up any balls. He had 7 tackles. But twice I saw him downfield on balls that were thrown towards A.J. Green, who is a Pro Bowl receiver and one of the better receivers in football. And Kevin King was right there. Now, Andy Dalton threw a ball, didn't throw anything that was catchable, which, like we've said a couple times on this show, does not surprise anybody. It's Andy Dalton. But Kevin, the point is Kevin King was there. He was in the TV frame. He was right there with Green. We've wanted that speed. We've wanted that size at corner. Didn't disappoint. So we talked about how important it was going to be for these rookies to contribute before the season was over, and here we are in week 3, and we're already seeing them step up and make big plays. Blake Martinez had a great day today. He's not a secondary guy, which I know is what we're talking about specifically, but he turned in a nice day today. So the point is the young guys. The young guys are stepping up and playing well in the secondary. Hopefully they can continue to stay healthy. Josh Jones had some injuries during the preseason, and you kind of hope that he wasn't going to be one of those guys that was dinged up all year and didn't get a chance to play. So, you know, I thought overall, Jones obviously turned in an incredible game. I mean, spoiler alert, my game balls and lame calls goes up tomorrow morning. I think you might see Josh Jones' name sooner than later on the list, and we all know what side of the equation that he's going to be on. Kevin King was fantastic as well, and I think this pretty much ends Quentin Rollins' run as a starting outside cornerback, and the Packers will have to figure out what to do with him between he and Demaryius Randall. And Randall had a couple of okay plays today, and he struggled at times. But these young defensive backs, I mean, it looks like the Packers kind of hit on both. And with them being the first 2 picks that were made this year, obviously there's a lot of pressure to get it right. And the Packers have been, you know, kind of criticized, and Ted Thompson's been criticized for missing at times on early picks. Doesn't look like that's going to be the case this year. But, you know, you cross your fingers that it's consistent and it builds on each other and that we don't see a roller coaster week to week.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the nice part about today's game is today's September 24th. You imagine that just by experience and organic growth, Kevin King and Josh Jones will be better players by the end of the year. I'll be interested to see what the snap counts look like tomorrow as well, because I don't have that information privy to me. I just have what I can go off of in memory, and sometimes from what I was doing, my view is a little obstructed, so it's hard to kind of keep track of everything. But I don't know how much, if at all, well, I know he played a couple snaps, but I don't know how much Quentin Rollins played today. And I know that essentially your base corners were Kevin King and Demaryius Randall. And it looked like, again, this is going strictly from memory, that Morgan Burnett was playing the slot corner position mostly. I'll be interested to see how much of that turns out to be true, because from my brain, which isn't very big for those of you that listen very often, from my brain, that's what I seem to remember. So I'm interested to see that. And kind of just, I'm excited about the potential growth of this defense, because the reality is they gave up 3 points in the second half against, I mean, I know it's Andy Dalton, and I know they haven't had a ton of success, but there's some talented players on that offense. And they acquitted themselves pretty well today, I thought, without Mike Daniels and Nick Perry, arguably their two best players on the defense. So if nothing else, I say it all the time, you know, this isn't college football. The aesthetics don't matter. At the end of the day, ultimately what matters is the Packers scored 27 points and the Bengals scored 24. And it's just about winning at this point. The other thing, I don't want to gloss over it either, because the Packers, they get the ball with about 3.5 minutes left. And Aaron Rodgers pulls, I mean, no offensive linemen are left. You know, Bakhtiari and Bulaga left the game with an injury, so he's playing with two. He's playing with his fourth and fifth tackles. Ty Montgomery hasn't played well to date, so it's not really his day. The Packers haven't really been able to stretch the field throughout the course of the game, and Rodgers leads them down the field and throws a dart to Jordy Nelson to tie the game with about 11 seconds left. And that throw was, I mean, Jordy made a great catch, obviously, but that throw from Aaron Rodgers, I think those are things that we kind of take for granted. Because, oh, Aaron does that all the time. Like, every quarterback must be able to do that. No. Rodgers was great on that last drive. And, you know, Geronimo Allison made a couple plays. Jordy Nelson made a couple plays. Ultimately, the Packers were able to put the ball in the end zone and make it 24 apiece, which kind of goes against one of the narratives, you know, is that Rodgers can't do the whole fourth quarter comeback thing, which is nonsense, in my opinion, because I think that whole fourth quarter comeback stat is stupid. But that being said, when it does happen, it's fun, like today's game, for example. But the Packers tie the game. They go into overtime. And, Jason, I know you and I were thinking, if I'm thinking it, I know you were thinking it. The Bengals win the coin toss, and I'm just like, good God, like, the Packers can never win a coin toss in overtime. So Rodgers is standing on the sidelines, and he's not going to be able to get the ball, because I'm thinking, okay, we're going to do that. It's going to be exhilarating. And then the Bengals are going to go right down the field and score a touchdown. It's not even going to matter. And the defense forces a three and out. Jason, be honest. I know you, and I know how you think to some degree. Scale of 1 to 10. How surprised were you that the Packers defense didn't allow any points once the Bengals got the ball first?
Well, if 10 is the most surprised, then I was at a 10, because it's just not what happens with the Packers. They just don't get lucky like that. It's a weird game, unfamiliar opponent thing, all the stuff I've talked about a million times. Aaron Rodgers is 0-7 in overtime games. You know, I don't care about the narrative that he can't come back. That's already been dispelled. You know, the Dallas game last year and you know, the Hail Mary game a couple of years ago, and I mean, I think we know he can do it. But it was just the mojo. It was just the energy the Packers had, which is to say they didn't have a ton until the fourth quarter. And late in the game, they kind of went into emergency mode, and they kind of got their act together. But it just seemed like if the Bengals were going to protect Dalton and he had time to sit back there and throw, they were going to be able to pick and dick, you know, dink and dunk their way down the field. And if they didn't score a touchdown, they were going to at least be able to kick a field goal and force the Packers to have to answer in some way, shape, or form. And then you just kind of felt like these defensive backs for the Bengals have been very fast and very active all day. On that game-tying touchdown to Jordy Nelson, that very easily could have been picked off. That very easily could have been knocked away. It was an incredible throw by Aaron Rodgers, and the defensive back was just a hair away from making a play. And it was a great reminder of how football is really, truly a game of inches. So things could have gone very differently, but the defense steps up and rises up and surprised me. And honestly, I think, you know, this goes back to the young guys. You know, we were surprised by the impact that they made. And it also goes to show you that football is a 60-minute game. You know, you can suck for 60, or in this case, it was longer than 60 minutes. So you can suck for 60 minutes and then all of a sudden make one big play when it matters. And that's the difference on the scoreboard. And at the end of the, you know, when the clock stopped ticking and the game was over, the only thing that mattered was that the Packers had more points on the scoreboard. But I was not feeling confident when they went into overtime. We've just been scoring too many times in OT, and it just was not a good feeling.
No, I mean, it was brought up right after the game, Wins isn't a quarterback stat, but the Packers have never won an overtime game with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. Never. Playoffs, regular season, whatever. It's never happened. And I'm with you. Maybe not a 10. I had some belief that Andy Dalton was capable of screwing something up. But the Packers defense, for one, first of all, I know they had a couple plays here or there, but I don't know why the Bengals even bothered to run the ball. Because, like I said, if you can't take away plays, obviously. But if you do take away, like, Mixon's 25-yard run, and Bernard had a big one, too, they didn't do squat in their run game. And they really put themselves at a disadvantage by trying to run the ball on first down in that series. Josh Jones makes a couple good plays, and the Packers have a chance to win the game. And, of course, just like the final drive of regulation, it's 3rd and 10. Packers do nothing on their first two. Well, for starters, at the call that came earlier and Kevin King was pass interference, that first pass to Jordy Nelson was definitely pass interference, but they didn't call it. Packers get nothing on second down, so it's 3rd and 10, and Rodgers gets somebody to jump off sides for the first time of the game. First time he gets somebody on his hard count. He hangs in the pocket. He slides to his left a little bit and unleashes a beauty down the sideline to Geronimo Allison. Allison makes some great plays in the open field, nearly scores a touchdown, and sets up Mason Crosby to make a game-winning field goal. And Mason, as he's done so many times, does just that, puts the ball through the uprights, and the Packers win 27-24. And it was great. I mean, the atmosphere in the stadium was phenomenal in overtime. Like, when Mike McCarthy says he thought the fans were great, he's not kidding. It was great in overtime. And please listen to me when I say this. Speaking of the fans, I don't want to tell you what to do. I don't want to make it sound like I'm that guy. I don't want to make it sound like I'm a perfect fan, because I'm not. However, the Packers literally are putting play or like things on the Jumbotron that say quiet, please. Rodgers is doing like the quiet down motion with his hands throughout the game. And literally, the crowd gets louder when that happens. I don't understand. I know it's exciting when they're close to your end zone, or any end zone for that matter, because you want them to score a touchdown. But please take the advice of the stadium people and the quarterback and shut the hell up. Shut the hell up. That's all I've got as far as that goes. Jason, take me through the overtime drive. I kind of went through my little bit there. What's kind of going through what you've got going on there as Allison is streaking down the sidelines?
Well, the way he was running, and, you know, at that point, as, you know, ironically, I just watched one of his drops at the end of the fourth quarter before they scored the game-tying touchdown. But the way he was running on that play, it looked like, I thought he was going to get in. I mean, it was one of those things where it's like he's going to get slippery here, and he's going to get in. It ended up being a 72-yarder. I mean, and a lot of it was running after the catch. And we talked before the show now, and I said it was hyperbole because obviously there's it's not time to compare these two players yet. But that play reminded me of some of the things that we used to see from Donald Driver in the Packers offense, where he's shifty, gets the ball, and then makes a couple guys miss, and he's able to run, and, you know, it was just such a nice grab. You know, Geronimo Allison sometimes makes these plays that make him look like he's been in this offense for 10 years. You know, he just has some great hands. You know, he made a phenomenal catch at the end of the fourth quarter on a third down to convert and keep that drive going on. I mean, he's done some magical things. So, you know, at that moment, and I saw Geronimo Allison running, I was like, that's when I was like, you know what? For the first time all day, the Packers are going to win this game. They're going to actually win this game. They're going to steal this one, and things are going to turn out right when they should have been never in doubt from the very beginning. I mean, come on, again, this is the Cincinnati Bengals and Andy Dalton, you know? So I felt great at that point, and it was a great play. And, you know, the Packers got a couple big passes today. You give Aaron Rodgers credit for making the plays, and, you know, he was under a lot of pressure. We've seen Aaron Rodgers just kind of fold And I don't mean fold in the sense that he's not good, but we've seen Aaron Rodgers just not be able to play his game when he's under so much pressure that he doesn't feel comfortable stepping up in the pocket. I give 12 a lot of credit today. He stepped up in the face of danger and was like, okay, I'm not going to abandon. I'm not going to spin out and try and run. I'm going to step up here. I'm going to try to find something. I'm going to let the offense work for me, something that he didn't do when they were struggling at the end of last season when they went through their losing streak. And so all these things I think are early signs that this offense can start ticking sooner than later. We aren't going to have to wait until late October or November before these guys reach their peak performance. And it was just nice that they made short work of the overtime period. Rodgers centers the ball. Crosby comes up. Man, ice running through his veins. Let's not forget Mason Crosby in this situation. We've talked about Josh Jones and all of the, you know, guys who stood out. Let's not forget Mason Crosby with a huge PAT, because the PATs to tie the game at the end under a minute, they're not a gimme anymore. You see guys missing it all the time. You know, Cincinnati's kicker missed a short one today that could have been a difference for the Bengals in the end. So give Crosby a huge, huge amount of credit, and it was a gritty win for the Packers, and it was just another something that'll quiet more of the critics that are out there that say the Packers can't come back. On the topic of the crowd at Lambeau Field, it's getting frustrating as somebody who's watched this team for over 30 years. The crowd has changed. It's not the same crowd it was 30 years ago when you had locals, Packers fans, the diehards, the season ticket holders. You know, the advent of the internet has allowed a lot of people access to tickets, and people can come to Lambeau Field now from far away, and they can check it out and experience it, and they can check the experience the novelty of it. And they may not necessarily be a fan of either team, or, you know, more importantly, the Packers, which is supposed to be a home field advantage. And somebody tweeted out at the end of the game, when the Packers were on offense trying to drive to win, they'd be like, well, now I wouldn't be surprised if the wave is in full force. And that's kind of embarrassing. You know, it's kind of embarrassing that the home crowd, I mean, there's got to be enough people in the stands who know better than to do something like that when your team is on offense and they need things as quiet as possible. So, yeah, I would definitely echo your sentiments of when it's time to be quiet, shut up.
Amen. And when it's time to be loud, scream your face off, because that's what we're there for. I don't want to gloss over Mason Crosby either, because, yeah, like you said, the PAT to tie the game, not a gimme by any stretch. You could see, like, you know, Steven Gostkowski, for example, missed a PAT in an AFC championship game in Denver, and that ultimately ended up being the difference in the game. Like, Brady throws a touchdown pass to tie the game, and it would have been to tie the game if Gostkowski made his PAT earlier in the game, but he didn't, so they had to go for two. They didn't get the two-point conversion, and they lost. So the Broncos played in the Super Bowl against the Panthers instead of the Patriots, for example. Crosby booted it through like it was nothing. And then, obviously, the overtime field goal. Listen, when it comes to overtime and game-winning field goals specifically, I'm not suggesting that players loaf or anything like that. So don't take it that way. But I think there are some kicks that are quote-unquote chip shots that the field goal block unit is just like, oh, okay, I mean, they got their 3 points. Let's, you know, hope the offense can either match them or score a touchdown. We kind of did our job to some degree. When it comes to overtime, that's win or lose. And blocking that kick, I mean, I've seen it before where a block kick, if a kick gets blocked and goes behind the line of scrimmage, the defense is scoring on that play almost every time. There's just not a lot of athletes on the field for the field goal team, and you can't say the same for the field goal block team. So for Crosby to boot that through as easily as he did, listen, the guy's been money for almost every season since he had that bout with whatever the hell you want to call that was going on with him, where every week it was, did the Packers finally cut Mason Crosby? Let's go to the flatline moment of the game and the ticket king of the game, and I'm kind of bunching them in because we're pressed a little bit for time at this point. I got a hard time thinking that we'll disagree at any point here, Jason, but you're welcome to if you'd like. The flatline moment of the game for me was Crosby's field goal for the reasons I just mentioned. And the ticket king of the game to me is Josh Jones, because he was phenomenal. And without him, I know Rodgers had the late game heroics and all that good stuff, but I mean, Josh Jones had two sacks, a lot of big plays on the defensive side of the ball that allowed that final drive to be possible. So I think that was, I think that's easy for this week. But Jason, do you have any other dissenting opinion?
Well, I will. I'll do it on both accounts. So, for me, flatline moment of the game was the Geronimo Allison catch. Like I said, as soon as that happened, I knew the Packers were going to win this game. And it took until overtime for that to happen. But that's just something that showed that Green Bay was ready to snatch victory from the jaws of defeat when it looked like things were kind of bleak and down late in the game. So, go for that for my flatline moment. And then as far as the ticket king of the game, if you want to go on the offensive side of the ball, and kind of mix it up a little bit, although I do think Josh Jones had the best overall game out of anybody on the roster, I'm going with Jordy Nelson, who had two huge touchdown catches. And he's just that security blanket and guy that makes things happen in this offense when there's nothing to be found, when there's no hope. Jordy to the rescue. And every time he does this now, I think more and more to myself, man, what is this offense going to be like when Jordy Nelson is no longer playing for the Green Bay Packers? And I don't want to think about it too long. It's kind of a sad thought, but he's just that special of a player. And to watch him develop through his career through some of the struggles he had as a rookie and then just become such a huge integral part of the offense, I'm going Jordy Nelson so that we can give some love to the offensive side of the ball for my ticket came the game.
Special player. He's a great player. He's a borderline Hall of Famer at this point, in my opinion. Jordy Nelson, I struggle to argue with him at any point you want to bring him up. He's been great ever since the Packers handed him the reins, if you will, of the wide receiving core post Greg Jennings and Donald Driver. Packers-Bears is Thursday night. We kind of broke that down with Will earlier. It's a rivalry game. It's a division game. It's a short week game. Those things tend to favor the home team. And the discrepancy at quarterback in this game is large. Andy Dalton is not good, for example. He's much better than Mike Glennon. The Bears, I know they won here on Thanksgiving a couple years ago. Lambeau Field's kind of been their personal version of hell. Nothing good really seems to happen to them, save for, you know, a weird game. Basically, this is just a prediction. I think the Packers win this game. I'm not going to say big. I think if they had both their tackles, that this would be a big win, you know, like a 34-10 kind of win. I think the Packers win this game eventually. It's comfortably. But the Bears have a pretty good defense. And the Packers might be, again, without their starting tackles, which, I mean, when you're facing a bad defense, that doesn't bode well. It really doesn't do it when you're facing a pretty good one. So I like the Packers in this game. I will say that the final score of this game is 27-17. I think the Packers get a late touchdown to kind of put this game away and go to 3-1 before the mini bye week, and then they come back and play at Dallas against the Cowboys. So that should be a fun little matchup. Hopefully they can get some guys healthy in the meantime. Jason, what do you got? Who wins?
So it's a short week and they're beat up, but I think the Packers managed their roster really well this week, and I think they kind of made some decisions on who was available in this week's game against the Bengals with the idea that in 4 days they were going to have to turn around and play a division rival. So you never go into a game thinking you're going to lose, but I think if you would – rather go shorthanded and be a little bit riskier, it might be a little bit better to do that in this game where it's not divisional and it could be a little less costly if they don't win it versus the game against the Bears who, you know, like we said when we were talking with Will, still aren't necessarily scaring a ton of people even though they've won a couple of games and they should have beat the Falcons on opening day. So I have the Packers winning this one, and I think – you know, the score that keeps running through my head is 28-17, but I think Chicago might actually end up scoring a few more points just because of that running game and how shifty those guys are. I mean, the Packers had a lot of trouble stopping that run game of the Bengals, and the Cincinnati offensive line isn't that great. So I think they're kind of in the same situation here where, you know, they just have to be a little bit better and faster than Chicago's offense, but those are some really good running backs. So 28-20, 28-17, either way, I think the Packers get a huge win. They will improve to 3-1 and come out of the first quarter of the season, I think, in about as good or better shape than most of us kind of predicted and had it. I think, Jacob, you and I are still undefeated in our preseason prediction for how things have gone so far, so we're whole there.
We are. Next, we'll pick lottery numbers, so stay tuned for that. So we both like the Packers to win this game. That takes to the final segment of the show. It is parting shots. I had the honor last week. Jason, it is your week. What's on your mind?
So I know we don't have a ton of time here, but I'm going to address this topic, which has come up again and again and again. But today the Packers made a statement. And before the game, they had a few players, including rookie Kevin King, who decided to sit during the national anthem. Now, we haven't seen this type of display from the Packers before. We saw Martellus Bennett raise a fist. We haven't seen players kneel or sit. But our president of the United States decided to take to social media and chastise the NBA champion Golden State Warriors and disinvite them to the White House because their star player, Stephen Curry, wasn't sure he wanted to go to the White House because of everything that's been going on in this country and some of the criticisms that our president has faced because of these racial issues, which have been going on long before this current administration took office. I, for one, remind everybody that it's what's in your heart that matters more than whether or not you're on your feet. These players, some will argue, have no business using football as their platform and should be more appreciative that they've had a chance to do something and play a child's game and make good money doing it and have no business kneeling and acting disrespectful to the military, the flag, and those that have fought for their freedoms. When many of those military members remind us all that the reason that they go out and fight for it is so that we can express ourselves and we can say what we want to say. These are peaceful protests. You can disagree with them all you want, but in the hearts of all these players, I guarantee you, if you ask every single one of them, none of them want to see this country falter. None of them don't support our military. And we all want to see the red, white, and blue succeed. So to stand there and say that it's disrespectful and that it's wrong and harp on these Packer players for doing what they do is very hypocritical to me. And I say that because are any of you who are complaining going to march into 1265 Lombardi with your season tickets, lay them on the counter and say, I want to revoke my season tickets now. I'm so distraught and upset about what the Packers are doing, and I'm going to make a statement of my own. I guarantee you that you're not, but if you do, there's about 25 years worth of people waiting to get tickets to these games who would have no problem with you doing that. So express your viewpoint, and that's fine, and I certainly respect everybody's right to disagree with what these players are doing, but know that in their hearts, they're trying to do better for the collective good of all of us, not just in the United States, but in the world. Look at it from the standpoint of it's an expression. We can agree to disagree, but in the end, let's remember, we're all Packers fans, and we all want to see the Packers succeed.
Well said. The only thing I guess I'd really want to add to that is I've talked about my feelings on the national anthem before. One of my favorite moments in my Packers fandom happens to be the anthem last year against the Giants, and that's because of some of my personal battles, I suppose, and it was just an emotional thing for me, but it's always been that way for me personally. I will stand for every national anthem because that's what it is to me. However, I don't know where some people come off as to thinking they can tell others what to do when it comes to, Martellus Bennett, I don't mean to keep bringing him up, but, he basically said, I'll stand when I want, I'll sit when I want. You're not Debo, which is a reference to the big character in Friday, who basically tells everybody in that neighborhood what to do. I don't think that anybody should be telling anybody what it is to do, especially when Nobody's listening to the other side of things here. They're just saying what it is, what they think it is, what they feel it is, and that is fact. And the other person can't tell you anything. And I tweeted something over the weekend, and I really think that it's true, and that is partisanism, partisan politics has ruined common sense. For example, I'm not going to tell you who you should have supported in the presidential election. I think that that would be wrong of me to do so. I've often told people, if you want to know who I voted for, the answer is none of your damn business. But whether you are one of President Trump's staunch supporters or somebody who absolutely hates the sight of him, it's not hard to understand that the president of the United States, the leader, the one who represents this country, calling people citizens of his country that aren't doing anything criminally, sons of blanks at a rally in Alabama, is wrong. It just is. But because partisan politics has ruined common sense, we don't think that way. It almost gets glossed over because of that. I, for one, as long as your rights do not infringe upon mine, do whatever you want for the anthem. So long as it's, you know, again, peaceful and respectful, which is what these protests have been to this point. That's how I feel there. So, I mean, this was going to come up this season at some point. It was just bound to. I hate to break it to you guys. I mean, we're going to talk mostly about football, but when football and politics or football and whatever you want to call this intersect, it has to be addressed. So the whole stick to sports narrative, I guess, which is a popular thing. Sorry, I just don't know how that's possible anymore. Jason, I appreciate you bringing this up, this particular topic. If it were my week, I would have done the same thing. I understand, you know, I'm not going to pretend that I can't see what's going on in front of me. And the reality is, I think we all need to start listening to each other. And Aaron Rodgers really, I guess to bring it to football in full circle here, said it best that, you know, he said the Packers will continue to choose love over hate. And I think that's something that needs to really be driven home, because there's so many, we find so many reasons to hate each other, and we don't find enough reasons to love each other, unless that person has similar viewpoints to us. It's almost like the, you know, a dissenting opinion is a wrong thing, and that's unfortunate that it's that way now. So, Jason, before I sign off here, I guess, do you have anything to add?
Nothing major. Just go Pack, go. Big win today, and we'll be back at it. Well, the Packers will be back at it in 4 days, and you and I will have to kind of figure out how we're going to recap that one, but that's a great problem to have. We only have to wait 4 days for Packers football, so I'm pretty stoked.
Yeah, and I will be there Thursday night, so if you are going to be there and want to say hello, just let me know where you're at. You can do that by tweeting at my Twitter account, that is at Jacob Westendorf. I will happily come visit, shake hands, talk Packers with you. And I'm excited to head up there. It'll be me and my brother on Thursday night, so it should be a fun little time watching the Packers kick the crap out of the Bears, or so we hope. Thank you guys for listening to today's show. I mentioned my Twitter handle. Jason is at Jason Perrone, and the show is at Packer Pulse. Want to thank our sponsor, that is Ticket King. Our Ticket Kings of the game, mine was Josh Jones, and Jason had Jordy Nelson for our Ticket King of the game. Packers get a big win, 27-24 over the Cincinnati Bengals in overtime, the first overtime win in Aaron Rodgers' career. It was a great game. It was fun to watch. And hopefully Thursday's game, I guess, isn't as nerve-wracking. I appreciate you guys for listening, and though every week, like I say every week, you know, we wouldn't do this if you guys didn't listen, and I've enjoyed interacting with some of you through Twitter in recent memory. It's been fun. Like I said, you know, if I just said it earlier, but it really does bear repeating. You know, if you guys didn't listen, we wouldn't do this show. So I appreciate you guys for listening in. Thank you for listening to Pulse of the Pack, and Thursday against the Bears, if you are going to the game, bring your voices. Cheer with me, because I will be loud and obnoxious. Go, Pack, go.
of the Pack Podcast.